viral pandemics, to foist toxic and dangerous remedies onto a credulous public and promote self-serving agendas, even those with terrible outcomes, with the complicity of a fawning and scientifically illiterate media. Duisberg and others charge that by stifling debate and dissent, Dr. Fauci milled public fear into multi-billion-dollar profits for his pharma partners while expanding his own powers and authoritarian control. The resulting policies, they say, have caused calamity to global economies and public health and vastly expanded the pool of human suffering. The first time that someone, Dr. Tom Cowan, a physician from Northern California, suggested to me that HIV was not the sole cause of AIDS, I dismissed the comment as ridiculous. I had watched many HIV-positive friends die of AIDS during the 1980s and 1990s. I personally knew two of the celebrities, Arthur Ashe and Rudolf Nureyev, whose pioneering deaths from AIDS shocked the world at the epidemic's dawn. It seemed self-evident that HIV was the culprit. I had no idea that the supposition was controversial. I have since learned that today, a disturbing number of virologists quietly doubt the theory that HIV is the sole cause of AIDS. To understand the skepticism by many of the world's leading scientific minds, we need to venture back through history and briefly down a very deep rabbit hole. That journey pulls the curtain back on a shockingly corrupt NIH culture distinguished by lacunae that most Americans associate with politics, not science, cutthroat ambition, backstabbing duplicity, and moral bankruptcy. In July 1981, CDC reported a unique outbreak of immune deficiency-related health problems in a group of highly promiscuous gay men in Los Angeles, New York, and San Francisco. A May 1983 Science article by French Institut Pasteur virologist Luc Montagnier first identified a retrovirus that would later earn the name HIV. Montagnier believed he had detected signals of HIV in the lymph nodes of some of the AIDS victims he had sampled. After hearing a lecture by Montagnier, Dr. Robert Gallo, a blustering, ambitious National Cancer Institute researcher, entrepreneur, and homophobe, persuaded the Frenchman to send him a sample of the newly discovered retrovirus, promising to use his considerable influence with the journal Science to get Montagnier's work published expeditiously. Instead, Dr. Gallo stalled the publication to give himself time to cultivate and steal Montagnier's virus. With the help of other HHS officials, Gallo then claimed Montagnier's pilfered virus as his own discovery and used an imaginative and cunning retinue of subterfuges and intricate frauds to obscure his larceny. In his book Science Fictions, A Scientific Mystery, A Massive Cover-Up, and The Dark Legacy of Robert Gallo, Pulitzer Prize-winning Chicago Tribune reporter John Crudson meticulously documents Gallo's brazen flim-flam, perhaps the boldest, most outrageous, and most consequential con operation in the history of science. The book exposes Gallo as a mountebank who built his career poaching discoveries from other scientists and claiming them as his own. Scientists who worked for Gallo described his NIH lab, where he presided over some 50 scientists and a budget of $13 million, as a den of thieves. One of Gallo's scientists told Crutzen, "It's hard to be an honest person in this place." She said she knew three employees who committed suicide. Gallo confided to a henchman that he liked to hire foreigners because if they don't do what he wants, he can deport them. Gallo's former mistress and lab employee, Flossie Wong Stahl, reported that Gallo voiced his craven need for the Nobel Prize and his bitterness at being denied the honor so frequently that it was practically a rhetorical device. It was natural that Gallo found a powerful and reliable ally in Tony Fauci. Gallo's proof that the cause of AIDS was a virus, as opposed to toxic exposures, provided the critical foundation stone of Dr. Fauci's career. This claim allowed Dr. Fauci to capture the AIDS program and its attendant cash flows from the National Cancer Institute and launch the project of building NIAID into the world's leading drug production empire. On April 23, 1984, Gallo recruited his boss, HHS Secretary Margaret Heckler, to lend credibility and weight to his dramatic announcement. Heckler took the stage before a packed scrum of international press. "Good afternoon," she told the world. "Ladies and gentlemen, first, the probable cause of AIDS has been found, a variant of a known human cancer virus." She pointedly added, "Today we add a new miracle to the long honor roll of American medicine and science." Heckler's participation at Gallo's press event was important stagecraft because it gave the imprimatur of NIH's institutional gravitas to a theory that had not been subject to peer review. Only later did the public learn that NIH allowed Gallo to delay the announcement until he had personally patented an antibody kit that he claimed capable of detecting HIV. He had developed the test at taxpayer expense. Crutzen writes that Gallo conspired with a CDC official, James Curran, to improperly certify Gallo's test as equivalent in quality to a far better test developed by Montagnier. Gallo would make himself a millionaire from his innovation, while fanning fears of the presumably deadly virus, which coincidentally drove sales. The subsequent lawsuit over Gallo's swindle by the French government ultimately forced Gallo to disgorge half his proceeds. Gallo's premature announcement pioneered a new strategy of science by press release that would become a familiar mainstay in Dr. Fauci's arsenal of narrative control, culminating in the COVID-19 pandemic. The journal Science did not publish Gallo's paper until over a week after his spectacular TV press conference. At the time, Gallo's tactic marked a severe breach of professional scientific etiquette. This gimmick assured that nobody could review Gallo's work prior to his proclamation. Both Dr. Gallo and Dr. Montagnier, who had devoted their careers to studying retroviruses, were cancer researchers. Before the appearance of AIDS, both men had vainly strived to implicate retroviruses as the culprit in leukemia. In 1975, before he ever published a paper on the subject, Gallo gained national headlines when he publicly announced his discovery of a human retrovirus, HL23, that he claimed caused leukemia. He told colleagues he expected to win the Nobel Prize for his detection of HL23 in human leukemia cells. He didn't. Major labs around the country were intensely interested in HL23, but when they requested samples from Gallo, he ordered subordinates to damage the infected cells before sending them out, to make them useless for research by others. Leukemia incidence was exploding at the time, but ethical elasticity apparently insulated Gallo against qualms about purposefully delaying vital research during a global pandemic. Other scientists complained that they could not reproduce Gallo's success. Subsequently, two groups of U.S. researchers literally made a monkey out of Gallo's discovery, if not Gallo, by proving his HL23 virus was actually a humiliating laboratory contamination consisting of a melange of three viruses from a gibbon, a woolly monkey, and a baboon. Instead of a Nobel laureate, Gallo became a laughingstock. Undeterred by mortification, Gallo declared that a so-called HTLV virus, which he also claimed to have discovered — he had stolen the work of Japanese researchers, according to Crutzen — was the cause of AIDS. Puzzled that he could not reproduce Gallo's results, another AIDS researcher, working with gay patients, asked Gallo if the discrepancy was because Gallo might be studying a different risk group. Was your patient a Haitian? A hemophiliac? The scientist queried. It was a fucking fag, replied Gallo. When asked to address Duisberg's announcements about the HIV-AIDS hypothesis, Gallo often dismissed Duisberg's objections because, Gallo suggested, Duisberg was gay and or mentally disturbed. Duisberg is straight and sane. Duisberg comes to meetings with guys with leather jackets and the hair and so on in the middle. I mean, that's a little bit odd. Doesn't it speak of something funny? These were the sorts of petty defamations that Gallo generously offered instead of argument to defend his work. But Gallo's failure to demonstrate that he could find HTLV in the blood of men suffering from AIDS threatened to put the final nail into his naked Nobel ambitions. At the height of that personal crisis, Gallo learned of Montagnier's success. Unwilling to accept defeat by the French, he gulled the credulous virologist into sending him a sample, which he cultured on a substrate that, according to Crutzen, he stole from yet another scientist. When he succeeded in finding signs of Montagnier's virus in the blood of gay men suffering from immune system collapse, Gallo rebranded it HTLV and claimed it to be the same virus he had lately discovered. Gallo's lab notes, obtained by the Chicago Tribune, show that Gallo renamed the French virus repeatedly, apparently to further obscure its pedigree. The following spring, Science published the four papers from Gallo's lab, upon which Gallo's celebrity as the Superman of AIDS entirely rests. The first paper reported Gallo's isolation of a so-called new virus from AIDS patients. Gallo's lab had apparently cultivated and rechristened the French virus. The second paper declared that the new virus had been isolated from a total of 48 subjects, a finding that would go far toward proving that the virus caused the disease. Examination of Gallo's lab notes by the Chicago Tribune found no traces of these 48 isolates. American and French governments skirmished over which scientist discovered HIV, until the combatants agreed in 1987 to call it a co-discovery. The WHO delayed its response for 2 years, as Gallo employed a series of artifices to pretend that there were two different viruses. By delaying the announcement of the French scientists' earlier discoveries, Gallo stalled the introduction of a widely available blood test for the AIDS virus by about a year. During that 1983 to 1984 interregnum, thousands of hospital patients and hemophiliacs received tainted blood from blood banks and became infected with HIV, and many of the already infected unwittingly spread the virus. The Nobel Committee awarded Montagnier its prize in 2008, conspicuously snubbing Gallo, whose notorious ethical lapses were by then abundantly documented. Gallo's unsupported claims and sketchy conduct resulted in 2 U.S. government inquiries into his professional ethics, NIH and congressional. Pulitzer Prize winner John Crutzen's 55,000-word expose in the Chicago Tribune documenting Gallo's theft provided a withering portrait of Gallo as a sociopath and pathological liar who employed thieving felons to run his lab, a pirate enterprise engaged in pilfering money from the federal government and swiping discoveries from other scientists. The Sturm und Drang around the competing claims obscured the fact that both cancer researchers produced scientific papers that did nothing more than suggest their retrovirus might cause AIDS. Montagnier always moderated his own claims that HIV was proven the sole cause of AIDS and would eventually disavow the theory. Recalling how public revelations about Bob Gallo's acrobatic chicanery during his efforts to link leukemia to HIV had nearly destroyed Gallo's career, Nobel laureate Carrie Mullis, who unfortunately died in August 2019, just before the COVID-19 pandemic, noted, HIV didn't suddenly pop out of the rainforest or Haiti. It just popped into Bob Gallo's hands at a time when he needed a new career. Duesberg later said he stole the fake diamonds from Luc Montagnier. Pouring concrete on confirmation bias. But, like Dr. Fauci, Gallo had both the PIs and press in his pocket. NIH's mythical prestige lent Heckler's statement a near-religious authority. The medical establishment quickly embraced Gallo's scientific hypothesis. Suspending traditional skepticism toward government pronouncements, the press ordained Gallo's theory as indisputable doctrine and beatified Gallo as a saint. Says journalist and editor Mark Gabrish Conlon of Gallo's big press event, the conference was held before any of Robert Gallo's papers were published. Therefore, before any other scientists had a chance to review them and look at the evidence and ask, has he got it right or wrong? Gallo's announcement was a windfall for Anthony Fauci. Pinning the AIDS epidemic on a virus allowed him to divert the cascading river of AIDS money from the National Cancer Institute into NIAID's overflowing coffers. Dr. Fauci opened the floodgates of NIAID cash to develop new antivirals against HIV. He unleashed his kennel of grant-hungry PIs to concoct and test new drugs that would kill the virus. Remarkably, Dr. Fauci never funded to completion a single grant to explore whether HIV actually caused AIDS. Federal law requires that NIH's grant review committee be composed of true peers, independent outside scientists knowledgeable about a given proposal subject matter, to assess the application on its scientific merit. Ignoring those laws, Dr. Fauci began populating these committees with his own PIs. Researchers who reliably supported Dr. Fauci's orthodoxy watched their applications sail through the approval process. But scientists seeking to research ideas that departed from official doctrine encountered impenetrable obstacles. In 1988, a veteran NIH awardee, Seymour Grufferman, had his first experience with the new regime. Grufferman, the former chairman of NIH's review committee, had submitted a proposal to study the phenomenon of chronic fatigue syndrome, a touchy subject potentially threatening to the dominant cosmology, since many of Dr. Fauci's critics believe that CFS is non-HIV AIDS. "I never got scores like that before," Grufferman told Hillary Johnson, author of Osler's Web. "My data sheets were atrocious." When he protested to Dr. Fauci, he recounted, "Dr. Fauci was nasty." Dr. Fauci's tsunami of research money poured the concrete of confirmation bias onto Gallo's hypothesis. NIAID's PI army welcomed the fierce new bug hunt around this novel medical mystery. Thousands of health science PhDs seeking government grants rushed to study the virus, historian Terry Michael recounts. Dr. Fauci's PIs became the fierce guard dogs of the pervasive HIV orthodoxy. Nobel laureate Kerry Mullis knew the effect of NIH funding on cementing official dogma. "All the old virus hunters from the National Cancer Institute put new signs on their doors and became AIDS researchers. Reagan sent up about $1 billion just for starters," noted Mullis, who in 1993 won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for his invention of the polymerase chain reaction, PCR technique. And suddenly, everybody who could claim to be any kind of medical scientist and who hadn't had anything much to do lately was fully employed. The end of science. According to Mark Gabrish Conlon, the Department of Health and Human Services decided from now on, we are only going to fund AIDS research that assumes that Robert Gallo's virus is the cause. Dr. Fauci will not fund research into any other possibilities. Therefore, those scientists who might have wanted to critique Gallo's papers would not be able to do so, at least not with anything supported by the federal government, which is virtually all science in this country today, from that moment on. For 36 years, Fauci targeted all federal grants toward the single pathogen theory of AIDS. The Little Emperor made NIAID the go-to agency for AIDS research grants and spent lavishly, so long as grant writers towed the official line, about the purported viral cause of AIDS, the only hypothesis for which NIAID would provide funding. He used his awesome leverage to discourage inquiry into any multifactorial hypothesis. The PIs that he funded became his ideological commissars. The growing enterprise became the launch platform for his career as the most successful medical science bureaucrat in American history. One of the inevitable outcomes of this confirmation-biased research was the rapidly expanding definition of AIDS. Dr. Fauci's battalion of scientists implemented a wide-ranging HIV testing program using indiscriminate PCR tests capable of amplifying tiny strands of long-dead genetic debris billions of times. The PCR test could not identify active HIV infection. Mullis, who invented the tests, pointed out that the PCR was capable of finding HIV signals in large segments of the population who suffered no threat from HIV and had no live HIV virus in their bodies. Researchers naturally found harmless HIV DNA detritus in people with a constellation of other diseases. All those unrelated ailments soon became incorporated beneath the umbrella definition of AIDS. Individuals with Candida or Kaposi's sarcoma and a positive PCR test had AIDS. Those same individuals with a negative PCR would have Kaposi's sarcoma or Candida. Under this rubric, the AIDS definition rapidly metastasized to encompass a galaxy of some 30 separate well-known diseases, including Kaposi's sarcoma, KS, Hodgkin's disease, herpes zoster, shingles, pneumocystis carinii pneumonia, PCP, Burkitt's lymphoma, Iosporiasis, Salmonella septicemia, and tuberculosis, all of which also occur in individuals who had no HIV infection. Most people consider it blasphemous when you point out AIDS is not a disease, it's a syndrome. Paul Philpott, MS, editor, Rethinking AIDS, explained, "It's a collection of diseases, and those diseases get called AIDS if they occur in a patient that the doctor somehow concludes is HIV positive. All of the diseases in the category called AIDS occur to people who are HIV negative. None of them are exclusive to people who test HIV positive, and all of them have causes and treatments that are well known. They're completely unrelated to HIV. So any of the diseases, when they happen to somebody who tested HIV negative, are called by their old name. But when they occur in someone who tested HIV positive, then they're called AIDS." In the hands of Dr. Fauci's opportunistic PIs, AIDS became an amorphous malady subject to ever-changing definitions, encompassing a multitude of old diseases in hosts who test positive for HIV. Asked to define AIDS in a 2009 documentary, Fauci said, "When your CD4 count falls below a certain arbitrary level, by definition, you have AIDS." But how do we explain the many individuals who have low CD4 counts and no HIV? The growth of the AIDS pandemic was predictably explosive. Using PCR and expanded diagnosis, WHO estimates that HIV has infected 78 million people and caused 39 million deaths. Today, 35 million people live with HIV, with over 2 million new infections each year. This loose diagnostic system and the gravy train of financial incentives for finding